Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket. Hi and welcome to the fifth episode now of the Down at Third Man podcast. Big thank you to everyone for continuing to listen. Big thank you for also not complaining to Apple or Google or Spotify about us. We've yet to get any complaints. Somehow, all three of us are still here, and we're really, really excited this week to have two great guests with us as well. Before I get into who the guests are and everything else, we'd just like to say a massive thanks to Woodstock Cricket for their continued support. If you go and have a little look today on their Instagram or on their website, you'll see they've got some nice new hoodies out there as well for you to get ordering. And obviously tonight I'm, as always, joined by Jono M, as he will be known tonight, and by Aid. How are we, boys?
Thanks for the clarity there, mate. Appreciate that.
Not too bad, mate. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. I've just about got over what we witnessed in Chennai the other day. So we have got two guests with us, and you'll start to understand why I'm saying Jono M in a second. So our first guest, we are really lucky to have the Gloucestershire T20 star, Melbourne Renegades star, and also soon to be Birmingham Phoenix star in Benny Howell. And we're joined by the Woodstock MD and also presenter of the Slogging It Pod. And we're going to call him Jono G for the night, Jono Gordon. How are we, boys?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, all good here. Can't complain.
Yeah, not bad. Thanks, mate. Yeah, very, very nice to be here, gents.
Good, good. Now, for obviously, you guys at home can't see this at the moment, but there's three of us wrapped up pretty warm, and then there's someone who seems to be extremely lucky because he's in his T-shirts and shorts right now. So Benny's joining us from Australia, so a big thanks to Benny for getting up early to listen to three lads from Stoke talk absolute rubbish, probably, about some cricket. So we'll get into talking to Jono and Benny first, because I'm sure that's what everyone's listening for, really, and not for us three. Gotta say, boys. Down, yeah, well.
Yeah, they come listen to me and Jono, mate, not you.
Yeah, true. Fair point. Yeah, they've all seen my average in Div 7 and realise I know naff all about cricket.
That's what they're relating to, mate.
Yeah.
They see themselves in you.
God help them if they do. So, Jono and Benny, I've got to say, both of you, I think, have lived a much different life to probably us three lads in Stoke. Obviously, Benny, am I right in saying born in France, but had an Australian and a British passport?
That is correct, yeah. That seems to be every sort of articles written start with born, French-born, Benny Howe. So I was only there for 2 years, though.
So, well, class you as a man of the world compared to us lot that don't leave the ST5 postcode very often. And then we've got Jono with us, and I'd say, Jono, you're probably a man of the country, shall we say? Bit everywhere.
Travelled about a bit, played all over the place, yeah. Grew up in Cheshire, I've been down south for 20 years, and then recently moved up to Nottinghamshire. So just trying to bowl dob all over the country, really. I watch loads of Benny's videos trying to work out how he does it all with his fingers and stuff. So I'm still learning at the tender age of 38. But yeah, fair to say my chances of a pro career are long behind me.
And also got a link to Stoke as well, I'm glad to add.
Yeah, my old mansion, Burslem. I know Jono said that he wasn't such a fan of that. It must be a wrong side.
I'm a big fan of Burslem.
It's
not a problem with Burslem. It's the football club that's contained within Burslem that I've got the issue with.
Yeah, he's a Vale fan. But yeah, so when you lads have been rattling on about oatcakes over the last few weeks, I must be one of the only other blokes outside Staffordshire that understands what you're talking about. grew up on them as a staple diet. But yeah, big fan of the area. My nana's still knocking around there, 90 odd years old as she is, and my cousins and uncles and aunties and that. So, yeah.
Good stuff. Always good to have a link back to beautiful Stoke, I say. So I can imagine that both of you guys had probably quite a different introduction to cricket compared to maybe us guys. I think Aidan, Jono, you were both sort of introduced by your dads, weren't you? And I was sort of introduced because I stupidly became friends with the ginger one in primary school and tagged along. So how did you get into it, Jono? G, should I say?
It was my granddad. Made me a cricket bat when I was maybe 4 years old. Funnily enough, we did something for, maybe Benny will talk about it. Benny's got a beautiful little boy called Santi, and we made him his first ever cricket bat and put some Woodstock stickers on it a few months ago. But yeah, I think as with everything, it's either someone in your family that's, you know, loves the game and encourages you. For me, it was my nana and granddad. My nana was from Yorkshire, my granddad from Lancashire. So whenever the Roses match was on, they wouldn't talk to each other. She didn't know any of that. But yeah, it was certainly their influence that got me into the game. And yeah, very, very thankful for that.
What about you, Benny? Was it the same or was it more of a different path in?
No, pretty similar. I went to a very sporty school, and I was lucky enough to live on the sports grounds. My dad ran the school sports centre there, and he pretty much put a bat in my hand from when I can remember, to be honest. And we're big Warwickshire fans, so we always used to go. I remember my earliest memories was going to watch, Alan Dunald as the overseas for Warwickshire and all the Warwickshire players when I was young growing up. So, that was always my dream to play. Unfortunately, I didn't play for Warwickshire, but yeah, it was always my dream of playing county cricket and obviously, hopefully, one day play for England.
Yeah. Touch wood, fingers crossed. So how was it you ended up at, because I'm sure I've read that you were at Hampshire and then ended up at Gloucestershire, so how's that come about?
Well, we lived in a glorious town called Reading, which is obviously not so glorious, but what it was play for Berkshire, cricket club, well, no. The minor county sort of system growing up. And I was maybe about 15. I got in the Hampshire Academy. And then from then on, I got signed for Hampshire as a pro. So that's how it all worked out.
Oh, cool. Now, am I right in saying that you were an opening batsman? Because it astounds me how many pro cricketers start off in academies as like an opening batsman, then end up as an opening bowler and vice versa. It bewilders me.
Yeah, no, I was. I was definitely signed in the academy as a batsman. I actually bowled quite a lot of off-spin as well. So, not sure how I got to where I got to, but yeah, thankful I have.
And John OG, how did you sort of get from sort of being junior cricket to sort of where you are now? Because it seems like there's been a fair journey, and I know there was a national championship somewhere in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, never got to anywhere near the level that Benny's playing at. I was always a reasonable cricketer. Then when I joined Wimbledon in 2010, very quickly mixed in with a real good side, arguably one of the best sides in the country for that probably 5-year period I was with them. Not very little to do with me, I hasten to add. But then worked hard, started in the threes, as a lot of people do there, but worked my way up to the ones. Won the national T20 at Edgbaston on a glorious day in September 2012, which was an amazing experience. And then had 5 good years there. The team kind of disbanded, went to play for another side in Southwest London for 6 years, and now up to the Nottinghamshire Premier League, and, see if a 38-year-old can, try in and get it to do a bit off some green seamers. If the wickets are anything like they are in Surrey, or flat ones, then I might struggle. But hopefully with the moisture in the air up here, I might still have a chance.
Where about in Nottinghamshire are you actually going to sign for? Because I know some lads at Gowton, but that's, I guess, technically North Derbyshire, North Nottinghamshire, sort of, and almost South Derbyshire they are, really.
Yeah, I've joined a club called Papawick and Limby, so they're Notts Prem side.
Bloody hell, great name.
You say that thing about you.
But funnily enough, I'm just about to launch the new Woodstock showroom at another cricket club up that way called Cuckney, which is in North Notts. They've had produced some real good players. So Billy Root played there, and Luke Wood, who's now at Lancs. Sounds like there's some real good cricket in Nottinghamshire. So I'm looking forward to getting my teeth stuck into it.
Tony, just before you go on, you got Billy Root to try an oatcake when he had a sub pro game for Little Stoke. And he actually enjoyed him, mate. He actually enjoyed him.
I remember him playing for you and you being all excited. Typical. So, I know, Jono, obviously you run sort of the Slogging It pod that looks at sort of mental health issues. And I know, Benny, you've been sort of a big advocate talking about your ADHD. So, has there been many sort of struggles along the way in cricket? Any times where maybe it's been a lot more difficult than maybe people understand or realise at all?
With me, as in my career?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's been struggles throughout, I think. Especially, I guess there was more struggles towards the end of my Hampshire career. There was a reason I left Hampshire was I was on a few strikes already, but that was, you know, back then when I was playing for Hampshire, I didn't realise I had ADHD because I had it as a child growing up, but I never realised it stays with you. You sort of never get rid of it. You just sort of, I guess, manage it. You know, you learn to deal with it. And so the things I was sort of doing that gave me those strikes at Hampshire was, you know, turning up late on a consistent basis. You know, we had 20 minutes to get the ground and I would literally leave, you know, where it would probably take me about 35, 40 minutes, but thinking it would actually only take 15, 20 minutes. So things like that. And that's your time sort of, I guess, as someone with ADHD is all a bit muddled sometimes. So I was end up being late a lot. And then I was very impulsive. So at the end of my last year at Hampshire, I decided to go on holiday mid-season, which wasn't really the best idea at the time looking back. But it was, I didn't let him know. So yeah, that didn't really go down well. So I guess I've learned a lot. And it was, you know, when they spoke to me at the end of it, I was, you know, before they sort of said, no, you've got to go on. Yeah, that was a real hard time when there was a transition between Hampshire and Gloucestershire because I didn't actually have another county at that point. So I think that was probably the hardest time in my career.
So, John,
the club cricketer in all of us there is like, is just shaking her head there, Benny, going, don't see the issue. We've all done it, haven't we? Just turn around and go, sorry, Skip, I'm going away next week. Sorry about
Skip,
that,
I'm in Poland this week.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we had a game, I think after 12, I was in the second at the time, and it was towards the end of the season. It was a first team game. They might have been playing in somewhere up north, I think it was. They wanted someone to drive up, but they couldn't get hold of me because I think I was in Paris or Malaga. I couldn't remember, but, you know, it was a good trip. But they basically said, "Why? What? You know, you're still involved in the season. You're still around. You know, you can't just leave." And I didn't even realise at the time that I thought I didn't have a game, so I might as well go. So, yeah, I mean, looking back, it probably wasn't the smartest idea, but, you know, I'm glad to be playing at Gloucestershire now anyway.
Let's be honest, we've all been there midweek. Skipper hasn't selected you in the team and you've gone, all right, then, sounds gig on this Friday night or this Saturday, I'm out and getting levered. Then you get the phone call Saturday morning and you go, oh, bollocks.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, Jono, you've been obviously doing the Slogging It pod, which is like sort of really mental health based. What sort of got that going sort of for be such a big thing now?
So one of, I think you guys have been paying a bit of attention to it. So Simon Roberts, who's one of the co-hosts, is played a bit of twos on the two circuit and had 3 years with the YCs at Lords, but had a double stress fracture and it ended his career. He then went into a bit of a downward spiral, struggled to kind of, he'd been a pro in 2005 when there wouldn't have been anything better to be as an Englishman than a county cricketer, where everybody just thought being a county cricketer was amazing and people just throwing money at him, come here, come there, whatever. And he said he really struggled then to kind of readjust back to normal life, to being, you know, Simon Roberts again, rather than Simon Roberts, the cricketer. And it ended up with him making an attempt on his own life. Which, you know, I was talking to Eugene, our other co-host, about, you know, wanting to start a cricket-based podcast. And then we just said, well, you know, we need another one. Simon had been talking to me about, you know, was there a way that I could help him kind of tell his story? And so it very quickly came from there. You know, within 10 days of us deciding that we're going to do a cricket podcast, it then turns into a partnership with the Lord's Taverners. And it's, you know, very much, I think cricket's a vehicle for us to be able to talk about mental health, which is great. We've helped a lot of people. We get a lot of really nice messages. We've interviewed some amazing people. We've got some more incredible people to come on. I feel really guilty because actually I messaged Benny ages ago and said, oh, we're going to get you on the podcast, but I haven't got around to it. And now you both have stolen him first. So. Brilliant. It's been really rewarding. Like, we're really proud of the work that we're being able to do. We're beginning to do some quite cool stuff with the Samaritans, and I think there's going to be a partnership with them in order to try and direct people to somewhere to start the recovery process. So it's been really rewarding.
Yeah, I must admit, I've listened to every episode, and I've got to say, actually, I wasn't sure whether J-Tab, with him being a footballer, was going to interest me as much, but I've got to say, his episode last week was really top class. And to be fair, Laura Bailey's as well was really good this morning that I listened to. So that was, got to say, that was they've been really good. And I would suggest anyone who's got nothing to do on a Friday night, or even if you have got something to do on a Friday night, I would certainly suggest listening to the Big Night In, because it's been a good hour every Friday night for the last few weeks.
It's basically me whinging about stuff that I don't like about anything that's happening in cricket that particular week. So tomorrow night I'm going to take aim at the third umpire, I think.
It's absolute music to my... Every word of this is music to my ears. Absolute music.
So much about the name Jono and Arkin and Moan, I've realised quite quickly.
Cleanses the soul, mate. Cleanses the soul.
As long as it's not complaining about an Englishman, isn't it, Jono? That's the thing.
Well, patriot, mate. That's what it's about.
So sort of looking at more recent times and looking at like current career, Benny, I noticed that baseball seemed to have played a massive part in your cricket. Are you able to explain that? Because I guess to most people at home, they'll be thinking, how on earth does baseball, obviously it's a bat and a ball sport, but there's a lot of differences involved.
Well, actually going back to the mental health thing, when I left, after my first year at Gloucester, I that's when I knew something wasn't right and I needed to get away from somewhere that I just didn't know anything about cricket. So I decided to go on a holiday to Miami for 10 days or something just on my own. And I managed to get myself to a baseball game, and it was the first game. I never really followed it then. This was, I don't know, 2013 maybe. Never followed it, but yeah, I watched it and I became absorbed by the whole way they went about it, especially the pitcher and the catcher, and watching the catcher signal to the pitcher about what you know, balls to throw and this and that. And it was actually quite a dull game. I only scored one run in the whole game, but I loved it. And that winter I was going out to Melbourne, and I was like, right, I need to find a local club to play some baseball. So I did that, and I actually played in a club side in Melbourne, and I ended up pitching for them. We actually won the club flag or the competition, the flag at the end of it, which was, we were playing on a Sunday, so it was great fun. So I also played around with different, you know, bowled knuckleballs, split fingers, curveballs, sliders, sort of those sort of things. And I end up just watching non-stop baseball after that, and just watching pitcher after pitcher and seeing what they do. So that's how it came about, and I'm still a little obsessed with it, but yeah, that was it was good times.
Sounds good and sounds interesting. And obviously, you've been back recently, I guess, to Melbourne with obviously playing for the Renegades. How was that, being in the Big Bash and sort of being in, I guess most people call it maybe the second biggest franchise league?
Honestly, it was a bit odd, the whole thing. I think because of COVID, it was all a bit strange, because we all sort of, all the teams when I was there with the squad was in Hobart initially at the start of the tournament. And it was funny because Hobart was actually COVID free, so the, you know, all the locals, they were all just walking around doing whatever they wanted, and yet we had to stay in a hub, wear our masks in lifts, and then take them off out, you know, when we're walking out. There's some weird rules, and then going to the ground, it was like we had to stay in, like, you know, in the bus, go straight to the ground, and leave straight away. Like, there was no, I don't know, it maybe. It wasn't probably the same Big Bash as it normally is, I guess, when they had crowded, which they luckily did towards the end of the tournament. So it was all a bit short and sweet, the tournament for me. So I didn't really get to experience probably the Big Bashes for what it is, you know, with the crowds and all of that. But no, I'm very grateful to have played. Unfortunately, I couldn't play anymore because Renegades were so bad that they had to play. They played all their youngsters in the end because they had no chance of making it through after half the tournament. So, the plan was to play in Melbourne when they came back, but unfortunately, they were just happy with playing their local. So, yeah, it was, you know, it is what it is. But I'm glad to have played at least a couple games.
Turn. Hopefully, can I dive in.
Yeah, of course, you can, Jono. Dive in, mate.
So I've written down here, Benny, which I'm really, really curious to ask about, is we've kind of like debated over the last couple of weeks this England rotation policy and resting the players and sending them home for a bit of a rest. So you've obviously had like your little experience there of like the hub, the bubble life at the Big Bash. How bad do you think, or how deeply do you think that could affect someone if they were doing it kind of like long term? There's someone who's had like first-hand experience. Obviously, we've talked about the England rotation, and initially we were a bit thingy about it, a bit not so sure. But as someone who's had like first-hand experience of like the bubble and your hub in the Big Bash, doing that long term, do you think that's sustainable? Staying in that bubble.
With the England rotation, are you saying that they what only in for a certain amount and then they leave the hub? Is that what you're saying? They're planning to do.
Yeah, so that's certainly our understanding of it. I know they've got a bit of a bashing this week with the way that they've handled Moe and Ali going home. Right. But I think the idea that certainly the press is portraying towards over here is that they're sending them home in segments to make sure they go home, they get out of the bubble, they get plenty of rest, they come back, they've got a lot of games on. We don't want them in the bubble for 12 months. So I was just wondering if you could offer us like any kind of insight to it, like what it's like. We spoke to James Bracey a few weeks ago and he was like, they just kind of keep it. It just sounds like they're keeping themselves to themselves. It sounds a bit dull, if I'm honest.
Mm. Yeah, it's 12 months sounds a long time to be in a hub, to be honest, especially when you have family. Like I'm away from been away from my kids because they haven't come out here to Melbourne with me for 3-4 months now. And it's just, it's tough. And then put onto the fact that, you know, when you're in a hub, you're only able to go in certain groups, or, you know, you have to wear a mask everywhere, you can't mingle with the outside. It takes its toll, you know, and it was sort of like when I played in Bangladesh, I was there for six weeks, one of the times. And it's a similar thing, like you weren't allowed to go out because of the security. You know, you pretty much went to the ground, played your game, went back to the hotel. And it's quite similar. Yeah, you're not in Bangladesh, but you're still not really experiencing the things that sort of the country you're in, like especially Australia here, has to offer. So it certainly takes its toll. It's tough. You get a bit of cabin fever sort of feeling. And then obviously when you're in that sort of zone or in that mode, you start missing all the stuff that's outside, that's also valuable to, you know, your family and everything. That's, you know, more important than cricket anyway, in my opinion. So it's tough, and I can see why they've done it, because especially the England boys who've been in a hub for a long time, you know, long periods of time, it must be pretty tough. So I can see why they've done it.
Jono, to you, do you think that obviously on the Slogging It pod, highlighting the mental health things coming from cricket, do you think that actually there might be a positive to come from all of this bubble and COVID thing, that actually it's probably the first time that this kind of thing is fully in the mainstream media all of a sudden? Obviously, they've talked about the Moe and Ali handling of that situation this week. I've seen Joe Root. There's rumours already dropping about when he's going home for his little break. But other than Triscothic and maybe Thorpe a few years before him, mental health and cricket, it's not really been a massively mentioned thing. Do you think there could be a positive to come from all this?
Yeah, well, I think the positive will be that more and more people are beginning to talk about it. Like, as I say, you know, Benny's obviously experienced it firsthand. It's funny, isn't it? Like, you know, we obviously do a lot on social media, as do you guys for the Third Man, down at Third Man Pod. And it's, you know, you can see these keyboard warriors and stuff, and there's all these groups on Facebook, like, we don't like cricket, we love it, and this, that, and the other. And there's so many ex-pros and stuff in there. And there are people just writing some pretty obscene stuff. And I know that everybody's allowed an opinion. But actually, like, what we are beginning to realise is that these lads' mental health, actually, long-term, is much more important than, you know, an extra game of cricket. Or, you know, obviously, Moeen's, the situation's heightened a bit with him because people go, well, he's only played one test and now he's going home. Well, no, because he went to... when Sri Lanka basically wasn't allowed out of his hotel room, so he was on his own, completely away from all the rest of the lads. That must have been an absolute mental nightmare. He must have been going crazy just inside a, you know, 12-foot by 12-foot hotel room for that period of time. Then comes out, and what people are forgetting is he was always due to go home after this second test, but he should have played four tests. He just couldn't play the first three. So you can't keep a bloke away from his family and his young kids and what have you for such a period of time, like, because he's going home for a couple of weeks and then he's going back out for the white ball leg of the tour. Then there's a T20 World Cup. Then there's an away Ashes series at the end of the year. Like, the England cricket schedule this year is absolutely nuts. They just keep adding and adding to it. Like, New Zealand are coming over for two tests. We've got, four or five tests against Pakistan, is it? We're coming over in the summer, or India, rather. And these lads, you know, unprecedented times. The lads need a break. And I think that actually the public, all these people who say they love cricket actually need to give the bloke that they apparently love, who actually provide us with the entertainment, need to give them a bit of a break. Because otherwise you're going to see more Jonathan Trotts, more Marcus Trescothicks, more Graham Thorpes. And there's a huge amount of stories. Like, before I spoke to Simon Jones and Matthew Hoggard and Luke Sutton and stuff, we never knew these stories until they actually came on the pod, until they actually opened up about them. So this male mental health in cricket is, don't forget, it's the highest rate of suicide in any professional sport other than professional wrestling in the world, which is a pretty scary statistic in itself. So there are problems in cricket. It's just because they've not been widely spoken of before doesn't mean that they don't exist. So I think that the more we can start to highlight that and just allow people to think that it's okay to talk about stuff rather than bottling up, and it's not about showing this full metal jacket, and you are allowed to be vulnerable, then that's how, as a wider society, forget cricket specifically, that we can actually start to improve.
It's like after the first test, though, wasn't it? After we'd won, you've got, like, other countries saying, oh, you know, we need to follow what England are doing, and, you know, England are doing the right thing and looking after the players. And then as soon as you lose a game, it's back to, oh, are we doing the right thing? And the press are jumping on everyone's back. And
you get Michael Vaughan.
Oh, yeah. I won't start.
I hate him. Me. Yeah. I don't hate him because he was my hero, because he won us, was the captain in 2005 Ashes. But that man, clickbait opinion, as John O'M would say.
The clickbait opinion.
Yeah.
Benny would be really good, I think, as this too, because obviously Gloucestershire, the lads at Gloucestershire and the team have actually, between them, been through some pretty tough stuff. So Michael Klinger and Tom Smith and what have you. And I think Gloucestershire as a county and as a club, Benny, I'm probably right in saying, if, you know, actively very much come together, and you actually see yourself as a really tight-knit family, don't you, considering some of the stuff that the boys have been through?
Yeah, a couple of guys went through some horrific times, Tom Smith and Gareth Roderick. And obviously, Maxi Klinger had a hard time with his wife. I don't know if you guys know the story of, they openly talk about it, but Tom Smith lost his wife to some rare disease. And he has two little girls. And Gareth Roderick, you know, dad committed suicide a few years back. The guys always have been quite, you know, unique and different and got on. But especially since then, you know, we've learned to understand that vulnerability is actually, you know, it's good to talk about it. And what that means is everyone can sort of be themselves and not worry about people's opinions and judgments. And that's great to have from your teammate. I think being around teammates that are open and understanding about your situation as you are about theirs, then it's incredibly important. You know, it makes a healthy sort of environment. But like you said, with the media, you're going to get that no matter what. I don't think we can control what people say on the media. There's going to be people just, you know, trolling all over it, especially media, you know, at times. So I guess to be, especially when you're in the England spotlight, to have thick skin, if you like, is very important. But how you do that, or how you sort of have a strategy to deal with that, is all about who's around you with your teammates and who you're talking to, in terms of, you know, we have a sports psychologist you can talk to and stuff to be able to, whatever strategy is works for you to be able to deal with that. Because it's easy to say, don't worry about those people's opinions, but naturally you do read things, you do hear things. It does take its toll, especially when you're more vulnerable to sort of people's sort of judgment. So I think it's important, the group around you, to have the sort of understanding and someone to talk to. I think it's very important, and I think if more people can be open about things, I think it will spread, and hopefully it will sort of spread and filter towards the public, and then they can understand more, and then maybe they won't, maybe more people won't troll as much and think about what they say on the internet before they say it. Yeah, they can have opinion about the match, but you know, let's not, let's keep it, you know, at least polite ish you know, some of the stuff you read is pretty horrendous, and it's, you know, it's just, it's not really good enough, but you know, you get people like that. So yeah, so I guess we've got to do our part in terms of talking about it. So I think it's great that Gloucestershire as a team, we've been very good. So
before we move on to looking into the future, just like to say thanks to both of you there for being really honest and bringing up a bit more of a serious chat that, I'll be honest, I don't think us three are very, we're normally very sarcastic and daft with what we talk about. I think it's really good to be able to talk about some serious stuff like mental health on this pod. Looking to the future though, and looking a bit more positively, obviously Benny, big year ahead. Gloucestershire will obviously be hoping to go that step probably further in the T20 Blast, and the first ever edition of the 100s coming up. Are you excited for both of them? Are you looking forward to the 100? Do you think it'll work?
That's the $1 million question, isn't it? Will it work? I don't know, if I'm honest.
Honesty is the best policy.
Honestly, I do find it strange the way the rules they sort of made it, you know, very little bit complicated. But there's obviously a reason to that. They want to do something different and get more audience in or whatever. So I'm not going to be diplomatic here. I'm going to say I have no idea if it'll work or not. I do find the kit colours a bit weird. And
sponsored by Butterkissed. I like it.
Yeah, the name's a bit odd as well. I wouldn't have chosen those names. However, I'm very grateful to be picked by the mighty Phoenix. So I am looking forward to the 100. And obviously playing for Gloucester again. I just hope, you know, they can, you know, get the crowds back in, because without the crowds, it's not quite the same.
Any appealing to the club cricketers who are all of us there. It's just like, yeah, really looking forward to it. Don't know if the competition will be any good, and the kits are pretty shit, but I'm really looking forward to it. So it's going to be a good laugh. I like that. That's like that's like your typical second teamer when he's got to play for the first team, he's had a call up to the first team to play in like the cup on a Sunday. Doesn't fancy it, and he's got to put on the horrible, smelly, coloured kit that they only roll out once a year.
That doesn't fit anyone as well.
That doesn't fit anyone. They have to buy in an extra large just to make sure it fits all the lads. I'm sure they're not going to do that to you though, Benny.
What's your favourite kit of the teams, and what's your least favourite?
I quite like the Welsh one.
Oh no!
John, I was going to go a bit different, mate.
I'm liking Manchester Originals because it's just quite plain and not classy, but it's just quite normal.
You've always been playing, Tina.
Yeah. I can't be doing with the Welsh Fire one. It's the red and pink with the hula hoop sponsor. Just beyond me, that is.
I just think it's that funny. It's good. That's what I like about it. It's just wildly entertaining.
I can't understand why the Southern Brave one looks like an ordnance survey map that you used after having like year 7 geography as well. That's beyond me.
I'm going to get them up now, because I'm sure there's a couple of them that I don't know what they are.
I'm interested.
My team's not great colours. I remember looking at it and I was like, oh, okay.
Is it orange, Benny?
Yes. But it's, it wasn't my favourite.
Oh, it's pretty. I didn't realise that the lines on yours, Benny, were that kind of like out there.
Erratic, I would be.
Yeah, they are quite out there, aren't they?
To be fair, John OG's new local team, the Trent Rockets, I mean, they look like, I think they're sponsored by Skips, and they look like a packet
that
of
is,
Skips as well.
That's horrendous.
I'm just having a look at them here.
The Trent Rockets. It looks like a pack of crisps.
To be fair, though, I'm all over Birmingham. My main man's playing for him, so I'm all over Birmingham this year.
Speaking, obviously, of the sponsorship of Benny, how did you end up involved in Woodstock, Jono? And how, obviously, Toby Tarrant and Max Rushton are involved as well, which I'm sure plenty of listeners will recognise. I do listen to Toby Tarrant because Radio X is the only radio station I will ever listen to, because I refuse to listen to any other music, so...
Are we getting something out of him, are we?
Oh, don't,
is that just a shameless plug?
Living it, I struggle to get anything out of Toby Terrenick, even tweets. You won't be getting anything out of him. I've been involved in Woodstock since 2010. So John used to work for Newbury and used to look after me when he was there. He then left after they got bought out, settled Woodstock. I bought into it. It's a very short way of saying it. And then I bought it off John with a group of investors kind of July, August time last year. So, we're a bit of a sleeping giant. Like, we've got, you know, hopefully Benny will back me up here. It's a, you know, we're all about the quality of the kit, you know, but at a fair price. You know, it makes my blood boil that there are bats out there nowadays for 900 quid and 1,000 quid. Like, Benny won't have to ever worry about that. But, you know, mere mortals can... Oh, yeah. Grey Nichols Legend.
Isn't the Missouri one about a grand as well?
There's the ton. I've no idea. But the Newbury had a bat called the Senkos that was £1,000. Like, and it's just a piece of wood. Say again, Ben.
Sorry to interrupt you, but is there a warranty on the bats? What if you get out and smash it out on the chair or something? Because, you know, that happened.
Yeah, I mean, three 6 months they might offer, but yeah, it's nuts. we're about service. We don't sell through retail, so we want to talk to everybody about their own individual bat to make sure they get the best thing for them. It's great. You know, we're doing a lot of cool things. We launched the hoodies today, taking on a few more pros. We're trying to grow kind of internationally and what have you. We need to sell more bats to keep Benny in bats, so because he hits the ball so hard he keeps breaking them, so I have to keep sending him in.
I actually just got a broken bat in there, sorry John, I have to get one.
he's chosen to tell me on here rather than sending me a WhatsApp. I love it. It's been a passion of mine for 10 years. We've got with Benny and the rest of the guys, we're having a bit of a rebrand of the stickers. So I involved the pros in that discussion. It's very much like a collaborative family. I want it to be like we're like a Woodstock family, which is really important to me. And then, you know, Benny and the rest of the lads feel more invested in us as a company, as their sponsors, if they have that involvement. So one thing I did want to mention actually tonight, Ash, I forgot to mention it, was that I'm going to create a code on our website for anybody that listens to the Down at Third Man podcast, where anybody can access 25% off any of the Woodstock products online.
Oh, man. Me and Lyle need a bat. We haven't owned a bat in the room for about 10 years.
We need a team bat, don't we?
We do need a team bat. How embarrassing is this? You've got the first team captain and the first team opening bowler, one of whom opens the batting. And between us, we've not owned a bat of our own for about 5 years.
Brilliant.
I've only got to get a new one because one of the lads I shared was left.
Yeah. He's gone with the bats.
Gone, mate.
Benny's here and he's got all his bats in the background. Mm. Meanwhile, we've got two lads on here who play, I'd say, a reasonable standard of local cricket, and you haven't got a bat between you boys.
No, it's worse, mate, because every game last year, when he got out, I was going in, and it was one of them quick swap over.
Yeah, we were playing first team cricket and having to swap bats.
Proper year 7 PE vibes there going on.
That's probably a room 101 for in a few weeks.
Swapping bats. Make a note of that one, that could go in.
So, last thing before we get on to some sort of cricket talk and cricket news about what's happened recently. Just wanted to hear from both of you, sort of, what are you hoping for from this year, both personally and for cricket in general? Because obviously, I think we can all say cricket's gone through a bad year last year purely because of COVID. I think after the 2019 World Cup, everyone thought 2020 was going to be the year that sort of the sleeping giant of English cricket rose and we'd have all these new kids coming in and it'd be amazing. Everyone would be watching the 100 on the BBC and all of that. And then it obviously was a bit of a damp squid in the end, which was a shame. So what are you two sort of hoping from the year personally and also sort of for the game in general? I'll start with Benny.
I'm hoping for full crowds, definitely, at one point. I'm hoping for a full season without any more outbreaks, stopping, you know, all of that sort of thing. So that's one thing. That's something out of my control, though. As a team, I want us to compete in the new championship format. I think we've developed over the last couple of years, the Chris Dent as captain. I feel like we're obviously very much underdogs and whatnot, but we're definitely in the up. And I feel like if we can compete at the 4-day in the 4-day side of things with all our with the T20 as well, I feel like we can then start to become more recognised as I guess not such a county sort of thing, you know, a bigger county. So that's definitely our aim as a team. Personally, I want to stay fit for the whole summer. That's first and foremost what I want to do, because I did my hamstring before last, you know, end of 2019. I was out for over a year, so that was, you know, and I still feel a little bit sore these days. So I'm hoping that I can get through a whole season without having any hiccups. And in terms of performance, I have no expectation. I just want to go out there and enjoy myself. And I know that sounds cliche, but I guess if I'm doing that, then hopefully I'll be performing well. That's probably my hope for the season.
Good stuff. Jono, what are you looking for the year?
On a personal note, from a Woodstock perspective, I'm really hoping that Benny Howell scores 1,200 runs in the 100. in all seriousness,
and doesn't break any bats live on TV at any point.
You only need to hit it just over the boundary, Benny. It doesn't need to go over the moon. As Benny says, something that I'm really looking forward to is actually going out to see Benny and Jack and Smudge at Gloucester. I've never been to the county ground, so going and seeing them, going and seeing all the other pros at their grounds and stuff, just getting out and being able to do business and see mates and watch cricket. From a personal point of view, on field, I'm looking forward to having a go at the Notts Premier League and seeing what that brings. But I think, you know, for cricket as a whole, some people are quite negative about it. People keep talking about, the numbers of golf went through the roof last year. I think that, and I hope I'm right, and I may well be wrong, I think things will look pretty positive for cricket. I think that hopefully Boris's roadmap next Monday, people will start to get excited about cricket, because I think as outdoor sport, it's going to be one of the first things that's allowed to come back. And I think that people who love cricket, I think that cricket's in your blood, and if you love it, then people won't have just stepped away from it. They will come back to cricket. So I'm really hopeful of a kind of real positive 2021 and beyond for, you know, the recreational game, but also the professional and international game as well.
Well, I'd just like to say thanks for being so honest, both of you, and giving such good areas as well to discuss. It's been really good this last 40 minutes or so. Hopefully you're both now going to stay and enjoy the chat about IPL, India and England. And then I'm sure Jono is going to be very excited for the club cricket chat involving Room 101. So hopefully you guys will stick with us for that. First thing we'll look at, I guess, has got to be the IPL auction today. Now, I don't know about anyone else, but I thought the IPL was always a little bit mad. That auction today seemed to be absolutely crazy. Have I really seen Moeen Ali go for double the price of Shakib Al-Hassan for a start?
Can I just start? We've got to go. I'm desperate to find out what Benny's view of this is as a player, seeing like other pros go for absolutely bonkers amounts of money, and like the best T20 batsman in the world going for his absolute base price.
Tell me for what? I actually don't know.
So David Milan, as an example, has gone for his entry price. What was it, Turner?
I think it was basically 150 grand, I think.
Yeah, 150 grand. It was his entry price. Chris Morris has gone for 16.5.
Yeah, 1.6 million.
1.6 million. Most expensive player. Yeah, that'll do it. There we go. That was the answer I was hoping for. I've got my answer done. Thanks very much. Who else have we got? Shakib Al-Hassan went for cheap.
Moeen Ali has managed to get a 700 grand contract based on the fact that he slapped 5 sixes or whatever it was in the space of about 10 balls against India when the game was gone.
Pujara's got an IPL contract
to carry drinks.
And then you've got an entire host of... Alex Hales has gone unsold, but Pujara's got a contract. Jason Roy, unsold. But Pajori's got a contract. who else have we got? We've got some.
Adam Rashid was
Rashid,
unsold.
Yeah, unsold. Was but Pajori's got a contract.
I think when it comes, it's clearly when it comes to the IPL, when it's that much, when it's a bidding war, it seems to me that the owners who take over, and it's all about what names they like and what they can tell their mates who they've got for what. It seems, I mean, that's just speculating, but probably true. I think the coaches have a say to a certain point, but when it gets over a certain number, it especially when you see certain guys going for that much, yeah, it must be. It must be something about bragging rights, about names and stuff, who I've got, or I don't know, to be honest.
I mean, Chris Morris, for that amount of money, is just beyond me. I can't get my head around it. Like, yes, he's an all-rounder.
Like, not to knock Chris Morris, I'm sure he's an absolute stand-up bloke, like, but I probably watched more IPL last year than I ever have done, and I regularly saw him coming on, like, third or fourth change, getting some tap and then coming in and batting it like 9, 10. And he's going to be making £1.5 million.
Well, from what I understand, when I speak to some of the coaches who involved in a lot of drafts, they have their balance of the side. So they need an all-rounder, that number, whatever. They need an opener, batter. They need fast bowler. They got very specific the way they set it up. So maybe they thought, you know, these teams thought Chris Morris, that's the only sort of all-rounder they needed. There was no one else. They maybe around in that specific position. And they were going to be willing to pay quite a bit for that because just the coincidence that they needed that. And another team obviously wanted him, and they probably got in a bidding war. And that's where I think the owners are like, nah, we can just go. He's got the money. Let's just bugger it. Let's just go.
Bugger it.
But was like, RCB got rid of him, didn't he? And I think it was, I don't know how their money works, but it was 10 wanted, 10 whatever it is.
10
a million quid. They got rid of him for £1 million and then bid
9.5
for him anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. Good point. Yeah.
Benny, you got picked up. You were picked up in the fifth round of the draft, weren't you, for the 100? So what you just said there about coaches and owners want, I know the 100 teams are all owned by the ECB, but it sounds like that, you know, you will fit a very particular mould that your coaching team for the Phoenix will want. And so that's why, do you think that's why you were picked up in round five rather than round one? Or is there a very formulaic way they go about it?
Well, I think what they do is they have names they like, and then they will section them off in terms of, like, you know, they've got their top order batters, they've got their middle order batters, they've got their all rounders who can bat here or there, and they want their fastball, they want their spinners and their keepers, and they have them like in groups, and the players in those categories that they like. I think that's how they do it. And then obviously they can't control who gets picked up from the other teams. They see who gets picked up, so then they have to sort of cross that off and work it out from there. So I don't know. I was happy to go for what I went for because, I mean, who knows with that? You know, there's some guys going at 30, 40 grand, which could have easily gone for 75, 100, you know. You know, there's guys who went for, got 100 grand, 75 grand. I was like, that's strange.
Was it Tom Bell who went for 175 grand or something? One of the real young lads.
Tom Abel last year went for 100, didn't he?
Yeah.
Dave Villas wanted a quarter of a million as well.
I think that was an under the table thing, to be honest. That's my speculation. But from what I know, Manchester and his contract with Lancashire, from what I've heard outside. I don't know how true that is. But yeah, it's all a bit of a funny process, I think. Yeah. That's the only knowledge I have on it from when I spoke to the coaches who were involved in that. So. Yeah, from there on, I don't know.
Good insight, though. And one thing that did interest me I saw today is that, obviously, Chris Morris has gone for $1.6 million in the IPL auction today. In the draft on Tuesday for the 100, someone could pick him up for 60 grand, which seems like a little bit of a peculiar mismatch. Is he really going to get out of bed and come over to England to play in the 100 for?
Who's that? What's the name of that Australian lad? Played half a season in the BBL, never played in the IPL, and he'd gone for like 900 grand. What's his name?
Oh, you're asking questions of me now, mate.
That's all I said. He's only played like a handful of Big Bash games. You're an Australian lad.
Moises Enriquez, possibly, or Jai Richardson went for 14, which is like 1.4 million.
He was expensive, though. No, there was some young lad.
You're asking. Possibly Majeed? You'll have to find him and let us know, John.
I'm looking, I'm coming back to you.
While John is trying to look out for his man. Benny's got a shout.
Say again.
Did Philippe get picked up? He was like the man of the series, the man of the
big He was already at RCB, wasn't he, I think?
Ah, right.
I think he got retained.
He got retained
from RCB last year. While John O.M. does his Googling quickly and desperately tries to find out who on earth he's on about, I guess we should move on to Chennai. I'm going to review it in about two or three sentences. England, poor. Umpiring, poor. Pitch, poor. India, pretty good, to be fair. I think that's something.
Move on.
I feel like the two Jonos here are going to be good for a rant. Where do people want to start? Do you want to start on England,
pick one out of that list, and I'll very briefly kick it off with Jono G. And it won't take long, mate. Don't worry about that.
Umpires, then, because umpires, I just want to hear it.
Farcical.
Fixing.
So, ooh, wow. So all I'll say is this.
BCCI are just sending a legal document to you.
All I'll say is this, and I can honestly say I've never umpired a game of cricket since running an under-10s team, I don't think, which was Pairs cricket, and no one was ever out. Even if they bowled them, mate, they weren't out. Sympathy, like, no, they're crap. They're not out. They've been bowled, but they're not very good. He's okay. But obviously with refereeing, for me, it's all about process. And there was just so many things wrong with process. And at the top level, I think that's inexcusable, because that's like me going out and refereeing on the National League and I get a penalty decision, but I'm still looking at something. I'm still thinking about something that happened on the halfway line 2 minutes ago. And it's completely messed up my decision-making when it comes to actually making the penalty. Especially when they've got technology there to actually help them out, and it was a complete balls up from start to finish. I noticed as well, just to compound the irony, and I know two rules don't make a right in any case, but certainly they didn't make any mistakes in our second innings. Not like it made a difference, but I just noticed that they'd made sure they'd sorted themselves out by that point, that they knew exactly what they were doing. But no, farcical.
Before I let John O.G. rant, I just wanted to ask Benny, have you ever used much of the DRS system, Benny? And obviously the BBL was quite controversial for not having the DRS system, and some of the umpiring was a bit shoddy, to say the least. I've seen, who was it got given LBW when they were outside the line of leg stump, never mind, like, it being close.
Yeah, in Bangladesh I did. I actually used it myself. A view, a hit middle stump. So unfortunately, I didn't do it very well. But
Shane Watson.
No, I was trying to. Yeah, exactly. I was trying to reverse sweep Shakib, and I was batting Ravi Bopara for the Rainbow Riders. And I said, "What do you think?" He's like, "I'll review it." And I was like, "Okay, sure." And it was hitting middle, and lost through. I had to walk off. That was my
Again, Benny, for the club cricketer and all of us, we're all never out, just like, yes, lads, we're in. Review that, please.
Straight down. It hit me in the arm,
and I was just, I was like, I can't be out because it hit me in the arm. I realised actually arm is out. It's not part of the glass.
Brilliant.
You know, when you're out there, your emotions are going wild, you're never out. No. The umpiring, no, I'm big for criticising the umpires, actually, because they get away with too much. They've been absolutely horrendous in the Big Bash. And to be honest, county cricket umpires have been horrendous as well. And there needs to be a proper review system of it, and there isn't. Unfortunately, you know, us as cricketers, you know, if we don't perform well, you know, we get dropped or whatnot, and it's our careers. And if we don't perform well for a season or two, you know, you don't get a contract. So for me, there's too many umpires have been around too long, who've been awful for too long, and there needs to be a proper review of it at county level. And yeah, clearly it's filtering into some of the international games, and definitely in the Big Bash. I think there needs to be some sort of DRS system, and there can actually be like you said, even without the DRS, it could be. You know, so much footage now of county cricket is getting better and better that they can actually use. I reckon they could use it in county cricket as well, and have a proper review system of umpires of the performance, because a lot of it is, like you said, you know, they're making decisions and or from the last decision they made, or you know, they're speaking to the bowler, then all the county umpires are mates with, you know, a lot of you know, ex players or whatever. But yeah, it needs to be sorted out, because you know, it's people's careers on the line. So. Yeah, that's my opinion.
I just want to spin you a question there. So obviously you can't become a first class umpire unless you've played first class cricket, which with more money that's now circulating in the game, so through the 100 is only gonna, you know, for the lads who are playing in it, obviously they're gonna get bigger and bigger paychecks, and the amount that contracts are worth now, etc. I don't imagine that there's many county pros that necessarily want to become a first-class umpire. Is it time for the ECB to say, look, if you decide to become a professional umpire and we put you on a professional pathway, that you don't have to have played first-class cricket? Surely, if your eyes are good enough and you're a good enough umpire, you're good enough to do the job, right?
But having said that, I think Tom Smith wants to become an umpire after he plays.
Exactly.
Loves so much. He's one of the unique ones. Yeah, I don't see why you'd have to play first class cricket, to be honest, because a lot of the first class guys who would be umpire, especially from our team, would be a horrendous umpire. they either think it's always out or never out. So, no, I don't see why you have to be a first class player to become an umpire. I don't see why that makes too much of a difference.
Sure, it should be a case, if you are good enough, then you're good enough.
You're not playing the game, you're watching the game and you're making decisions on the game. So it's actually, it doesn't matter whether you played. If you understand the game and you go through courses and you get experience of umpiring, then for me, you could be a plumber and not have played cricket at all. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Makes sense. John OG, do you want to add any more to the rant on the umpiring, or even the pitch, if you want to go there?
Right, so, I mean, if anybody's checked out the Slogging It podcast, I did a spectacular 20-minute rant about this the other day. It was like
Came in off the long run.
Yeah, we did a special just on this. But so two things from my point of view. The BCCI are ruining cricket, because BCCI want India to play by completely different set of rules to the rest of the world, which is categorically just the most ridiculous thing. The ICC need to grow a pair and just stand up to him and say, look, if you want to be...
Corrupt, I think, is the word you're looking for, is what it is. Corrupt.
If you want to be a part of it, then, like, you know, and that then leads on to, let's take the Rohit Sharma stumping, first case in point. Now, I think the correct decision was not out, because there wasn't enough evidence to say that he was out. However, that camera angle, the camera might as well have been on Mars, it was that far away. Any other country with DRS has the ability to zoom in so you could see the blades of grass that he picked up when he ran his last single. But for some reason in India, that isn't the case, because they want to live again by different rules. The second one with Rahane, that third umpire, who actually is an on-field umpire, is pretty good, is at best incompetent and is at worst corrupt. Because how you can't then, surely, a review, you have to review it until the ball is deemed dead, which means it has to have hit the ground, in which case it was in Ollie Pope's hands because he caught it. But you can't just say, oh, well, it missed the bat before it hit the pad, so then, you know, we can't review it anymore. So, yeah, it's just incredibly frustrating. The pitch thing, I'm not quite as on board with. You know, I think it just showed that Ravi Ashwin in home conditions is much better than our spin bowlers in India conditions. Like, India were never going to prepare a pitch the same as the first test, because we dominated them. And so they have to, you know, they're never going to allow England to embarrass them 4-0 on four flat ones that disintegrate on days four and five. They were always going to do something pretty drastic. I think it'd be interesting to see what happens with the day-night pitch. You know, pink ball, you know, I think they produced some pretty good wickets for the IPL. I think it's also pretty pretty plain to show what the BCCI are about when they sacked the bloke who prepared the first wicket because he refused to prepare a wicket that they wanted him to.
Absolutely outstanding. That man is in a meat grinder somewhere in Chennai. He's not been found. He's not been found since, bless him. India have lost the test match. They've blamed it on him. And the poor guy's not been seen since.
He's under the patio, mate.
He's under the patio somewhere. Oh, have you ever heard anything like, could you imagine? Could you imagine, right, coming on and like bowling a shit spell as a professional cricket and they sack you there and then? You've had a bad day. Back on the bus, mate. Yep. Never coming in again. That's it. Thanks very much. Unbelievable.
That Rahane thingy on, though. Jesus Christ. Obviously, they checked if he'd hit it with the bat first. And then, obviously, they went back on field. And Root was like, no, mate, can you carry it on?
Even then, though, you'd have thought...
He's completely asking for something else.
Like, you've got the captain of England having to give you instructions on how to use the very technology that you're meant to be trained in using. It was embarrassing. If I was them,
at 5 o'clock in the morning, knowing what, you know, he's asking for. And a big umpire can't even...
I think Mark Butcher said on commentary at the time, he said, I get the thing about not being able to like fly a couple of umpires, neutral umpires in like they normally would do because of COVID and restrictions and quarantine and all that stuff. But I've got two things on this. First and foremost, a third umpire is done all on a TV. Why do they need someone sitting in the ground to do it? They could get someone in Australia to sit and do that if they really wanted to. That makes no odds. They're just watching a TV. They see the same thing. As Johnny would put it, they see the same shit pictures they got by sitting in the ground than they were for sitting at home. And the second thing is, I noticed that there's an all-English umpiring crew on the West Indies Bangladesh Test Series. So if they can get them out there, how come we can't get them into India?
Was that?
Puzzled. Yeah. What's his name with the Tash?
Tash.
He umpired England's games last year. You say his name.
Michael, what's Michael's surname, Benny? The really good English umpire.
Not Michael Gough.
Oh, Michael Gough.
Richard Illingworth, maybe? Or is he retired now?
Tash. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I've only watched the highlights, so don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you've watching the 2016 series, man.
Yeah, I could well have been, yeah. I was just trawling through the wrong one somewhere. But I'm pretty sure.
Just because we mentioned Captain Zenon on about how Root took it quite well, what is everyone else's opinion on Virat Kohli? Because my view is, great player, don't get me wrong, but he comes across as, I think the word begins with C, ends in K, to be fair. I just do not see how anyone seems to like the bloke. I don't want to sound like Tim Payne, but I think he had a point the other year. How do people actually like the bloke? I don't know what Benny will think as a professional cricketer, whether he likes people with that sort of like persona and attitude on the pitch, or whether it's just a bit too much.
I've been thinking about that, actually. I think I haven't really judged his captaincy and stuff about him as a leader, so I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, but I love the way he goes about it as a player, because I guess to be a superstar at that level, you have to find your way of doing that. And clearly when he gets in his zone, whether it's fielding, batting or whatever, he seems to just be a different human being. And I don't mind him putting on alter ego on the pitch, and if he comes across like an idiot, then, or people don't like him, then I don't mind that. As long as he's off the pitch, he's humble and he's, you know, he doesn't act like that off the pitch. I don't know what he's like around his teammates, though, so I can't really say.
I want to know what Jono thinks.
Yeah, I watched, he did a really nice interview about Joe Root for his 100th test. I was like, oh, maybe Virat Kohli's mellowing a little bit and this, that and the other. And then you see him kind of do what he's doing. And I can't remember what I put, but I was like, every time Virat Kohli makes you think that he's starting to turn into a nice bloke, he then very quickly makes you realise that he's still an arsehole. I also get Benny's point, and I've heard a lot of pundits and a lot of people in cricket talking about this week and saying, look, if that's what he needs to get himself up to play at the level that he thinks... He needs to perform at his best, then people are saying, you know, if it's across the white line, then maybe that's all right and people need to stop jumping all over him a little bit. I think as long as he doesn't upset the lads he's playing against too much, then just kind of let him get on with it.
It's, what's he like off the pitch? Does anyone know? Does anyone have any scoop?
No.
I know he earns £300,000 for every sponsored tweet he sends out, which is quite...
Wow.
Because I guess there is a line, I guess, even when you're in that alter ego state, that, which he seems to get into, I guess there is obviously a line where he's still got to, you know, try and not jump, you know, push the line too much. But I'm all for how he is generally on the pitch, because you think of imagine Michael Klinger, you'd say he's one of the nicest guys around, like, which he is, and he's a legend of the boat. But I don't think anyone, because he's probably, it's not been publicised, like, he's not, you know, played really a lot of international cricket, or they haven't really seen him, but he's a madman on the pitch. He's an absolute madman. And he's been in, like, arguments and fights and Larry stuff, and he gets fizzed up like he's a different person. And no one would ever think that, because he's obviously not on the big stage like Virat Kohli. And if he was on the big stage like Virat Kohli, maybe everyone would think Michael Klinger is a bit of a dick as well. But everyone knows him as a legend of a bloke, because he is. So I don't know what Virat's like off the pitch, but Michael Klinger needed that to get in his state to be able to be, like, you know, to perform. So, yeah, I don't think you should judge someone on the pitch unless they're really, really overstepping the line a lot. Until you see what they're like off the pitch.
I wondered, Turner, actually. I don't know whether you saw the bit where after they kicked off at Roots, when Kohli was kicking off at the umpires about Roots.
Yeah.
Where they came off the pitch and Ravi Shastri was on the sideline, and Kohli talked to Ravi Shastri, and then Ravi Shastri started just as they got off. And I just wondered how much of this, to an extent, it's Kohli to a bit, but actually, ultimately, surely the buck stops with your coach at the end of the day. I wondered how much of that had been fed through the coach, because I always really, really liked him when he was a commentator, but I've honestly never seen him smile since he's been coach, ever.
And he wears some horrendous gear, by the way.
Yeah, he sticks them sunglasses on.
Like a rapper, first and foremost. He's got that black ridiculous sunglasses on. Looks absolutely like he's watching a Jay-Z video. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that edge, though, because I see it, like, you watch them and then they look like they've got a bit of an edge in the inside nowadays. I wonder how much of that comes from him, or maybe him and Kohli, maybe the combination of the two. That's what I wonder. But maybe. Again, yeah. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I wish we had a bit of that edge. Maybe not as much as they've got, but that's certainly like that stumping, for example, Sharma. Like, to me, that's just out. But not necessarily, and I get totally your point, Jono, that they didn't have all the technology and it looked like it was being filmed on a potato. Totally agree with that. However, based off what I saw and what everyone was being shown, it was just out, as far as I was concerned. What they had right there then was just out.
Yeah.
But I don't know why there wasn't uproar. Because if that had been me, I'd have been probably facing a disciplinary, because I'd have walked up to someone and have gone, that's out. Why is... And everyone just got on with it, and I couldn't understand it. And I know full well Kohli had lost the plot right there, and quite rightly. And when Rahane got given out, not out the next over, I'd have been on a disciplinary for that as well, because they'd be going, it's out, mate.
This is the teacher here who'd be on disciplinary.
And a load of demerit points. But it's funny what Benny says. I don't know if any of you guys have listened to it, but I didn't particularly like him as a player. But it proves the point that Benny's talking about perfectly. Shane Watson does a podcast called Lessons Learned with the Greats. And I've listened to it, and there's loads of episodes like Mike Hussey, Ricky Ponting, Faf, AB de Villiers. And he talks to Faf du Plessis a lot about, and a lot of the lads actually, about how now that they know each other off the pitch, they've actually become quite good friends, because you actually learn what a bloke's about when you no longer have to play against them, because you only actually see the bloke that you're facing up against when you play against them. So I think Shane Watson, I mean, he's not the favourite of many Englishmen, is he? Apart from when he just used to, like, plonk his front leg down the middle of the track and kind of wear it on halfway up his shin. But that you should check that out. And they talk a lot about what Benny was saying then about, you know, you have to get yourself into a mindset at which you think you're going to be able to perform at your, you know, peak level. That doesn't mean that you're a dreadful bloke off the pitch. It just means that that's the zone in which you feel you have to get at to perform at your best. And like Benny says, if you've got a central contract or a county contract or you're living based on your performance, then I guess there's a lot to be said for, you know, you've got to be on your top game as often as you can. So if that's what people need to do, there's, you know, maybe it is a bit more acceptable. And those of us who have never experienced that maybe need to be a bit more understanding of it.
Well, like, basically, with going personally with it, is I've only sort of come to realise that over the last couple of years with it, because going back to, like, mental health, I was constantly worrying about what people thought, and it filtered onto the pitch a lot. So how I acted on the pitch, how I was on the pitch, I was in not really the best mindset. I was always worried about what they think of this or what they think of that, and I was very, you know, I was still figuring things out in my own head and stuff. And that affected my performance hugely in not in a good way. And it's better late than never, I guess. But I've realised that actually, if I can separate, you know, who I am off the pitch to who I am, who I need to be on the pitch to perform, then I need to do that. And it doesn't matter if I upset people, they think I'm a dick or I need to do, or I'm this or that. And it doesn't matter. It's my performance on the pitch, as long as I'm true to who I am off the pitch, and having that separation, I think, is so important for performance in general in all sports or in all areas of life, just having that separation. So yeah, I'm all for creating whatever state you need to get into on the pitch, as long as it doesn't go too much over the line where, you know, you're getting in trouble. But yeah, no, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, to be fair. I think it comes across, as I say, as a tool on the pitch, but I'd imagine off the pitch, by the fact that India, how they've improved and how well everyone talks about him, he must be a different person off the pitch. And I think, you say, I wonder whether that's why he struggled the first game. There was no crowd in, and he just didn't seem up for it the same as he normally would. So I think there's obviously a lot to do with getting in the zone, I would say, with Coley, to be fair. We'll skip over, I think, talking too much about how poor England were at times, and I'll just go straight into the next test. What would you guys pick as England's team? What changes would you make to that team? I would get Bairstow in. I would get Crawley in opening. And I'd probably go, I think I'll only play one spinner, Leach. So I think I'd probably get Anderson and Wokes in, plus a fast bowler. I don't care which of the three, whichever one's fittest, to be fair. And any advances on that?
You want to go, Benny?
I haven't, to be honest. I actually haven't been watching. I'm probably going to be useless in this. I haven't been watching any of the tests.
You wouldn't be a very good member of the 4 a.m. club, as we've dubbed ourselves, mate, is what you wouldn't be. That's,
apart from the last couple of days, I just didn't even tune in for
it. Yeah, yeah,
4 a.m. club didn't happen on the last 2 days because we couldn't be bothered.
I'd say Archer will come back in. They have to pick Anderson if it's a day-nighter. A lot of it's going to be based on the toss. One spinner, interesting. I think if they, India, I think, are likely to prepare a wicket that will turn early again. So I think one spinner might be slightly remiss. So Archer, Anderson, don't know what they'll do about Broad. I'd play him. I think we need to try and go 2-1 up. We need to win the series 3-1 to have any kind of chance of making the World Test Championship final. So you need to basically now go with your best 11 for the next two games rather than mixing it around. I presume you've dropped Burns for Crawley. I think Rory Burns is just... He's not had a great time of it the last year or so, but the ball he got off Ashwin, first ball, the second dig. Like, I mean, what are you going to do about that? I just think, you know, give him time. I really rate Rory. He's a hell of a player. Obviously, the fridge stays in. I think Crawley had replaced Lawrence. Root. Does Bairstow come in? He did all right in Sri Lanka, didn't he? Folks, I mean, people talk about Folks. I think there's got to be a conversation. We might not have time, but Folks versus Butler. You look at their first-class records, Ben Folks is a better option. He's just, and he's better looking than Joss Butler. So, you know,
Joss I will say this as someone who has absolutely zero interest in the art of wicket keeping, I can honestly say that watching him in that first and second, just watching him in that game is probably the first time I've ever genuinely just been watching a wicketkeeper work and just sat there and just gone, that's pretty good there. Like, he made something look ridiculously easy that also looked very, very hard. He just made it look like a bit of a joke. He's pretty different, that lad, I tell you.
Benny, the value of having a wicketkeeper that can stand up. I mean, you with all your variations, bowl at a number of different kind of pace deliveries and what have you, but you can get it through at, you know, 135 plus when you're bowling full tilt, and you'll generally have the keeper standing up. I mean, these guys are seriously skillful, aren't they?
Important, yeah. If you have a really good keeper, it's very important. I guess you've got to weigh up, I guess, the runs they score and how many chances they may take or create from behind the stance. But having a good keeper is, I know in T20 is very important. I guess on a spinning wicket in India, you know, they're probably just as important there. So yeah, I'm all for a good keeper.
Not in short sleeves though, ever. That's going to be in room 101 at one point. That's should be made an absolute no. Absolute no, that one.
Do you think Burns stays in then this test? I think
Burns
will come in.
I think Burns stays in. I don't know whether Bairstow plays. I can't see us not playing two spinners, because I agree with Jono. Now that they've won a test on that kind of pitch, even if it is a day night, I'm imagining something similar. I'm not kind of like advocating the fact I want it to be breaking apart like a pothole on the first day. But
I think it'll be like in between the two tests, because I think they'll bring Bumrah in maybe for Cole Deep. So they might go with one less spinner, but he's still going to turn from...
I think Wokes will play. I think he's the dark horse to play. I think it'll be Anderson, Wokes. I don't think they'll play an out-and-out quick. Ooh. I think it'll be Anderson, Wokes, two spinners.
If you were the BCCI, like, why would you prepare anything other than what they prepared for the last test for the next two?
You wouldn't. The only thing that would scare me a little bit is it being a day-night test.
But if they bat
pink
first...
Ball, isn't it?
Pink ball.
Yeah. Pink ball, yeah.
Right. They move. I'm sure they do. Well, I know when we played with it, we did. I don't know if the ones in India is the same one or not. But, yeah, they seem to quit. But we'll soon find out.
I would pick two spinners if it was up to me, but I'm predicting that they won't. I think Root's saying he doesn't trust Bess. I think they'll... And the fact that Wokes is there and hasn't played yet... I just think that they'll pick Wokes and they'll sort of say, oh, well, we couldn't trust Bess and we're hoping it's going to swing miles. And then when it doesn't and we get battered, I'm sure everyone will love piling in on Ed Smith.
I don't understand this. I don't trust Bess. It's like not picking a footballer who's scored five goals in four games because they were all horrid deflections off his knee. Like, if someone scores five goals in four games, he's playing. Do you know what I mean?
I agree totally.
I think the main problem is Stokes isn't bowling much, is he? Like, you know, if he bowls you 10 or 15 overs in an innings, we can go with two spinners and another two quicks. But if he's not bowling and you're only getting a couple of overs from Root, it's like, you know, we probably need an extra bowler, don't we?
I think Root will bowl more than Stokes and bowl nearly as much as some of the other bowlers in this test. Yeah. I just think that's what they'll go with. Which, to be fair, I like Root as a bowler, worryingly, but... I don't like him that much that in India I won't be going with just him and Leach, I'll be fair on that.
Yeah, if they make it like how they did for this test, you can't, because Leach is going to have to bowl like 50 overs, isn't he? So you've got to give him a few overs off and stuff, otherwise, again, he's going to be chucking a few halfway down when he's getting tired and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. But I think we'll part the England-India chat just because I don't think any of us know what's really going to happen in a pink ball test. I think it's still completely the unknown.
England's
the hope. Well, that's the hope, isn't it? No one knows what it's going to do, so you've got to hope that England is somehow going to come out on top. But I think
England to win in 3 days, mate. Coley to get a demerit point to be banned for the last test. England win 3-1. You hear it here first. I can't remember who I picked as top run scorer. I'm pretty sure it was Stokes, so he's due.
Yeah, you did say that Stokes was going to win the top run score, but only score 300 runs across a four-match series.
It's still bang on, by the way.
I mean, Root's not going to be far off already passing what you put as your total for Stokes, mate, and we're 2-2.
Don't worry about that.
Right, we'll move on to our, probably one of our favourite bits, I think, of the pod, which is all about club cricket. Now, we're running a competition with Woodstock for a giveaway for some three of the bags. Now, Jono and AD, you've had a bag each. How good are they?
They are very nice, actually, mate.
I can
move out all my stuff over soon.
I've not taken mine out of the wrapping, mate, just in case we don't start on time. But I've been absolutely pegging for a duffel bag for years. I think they look proper. You look like a cricketer, I think, with a proper duffel bag rather than something.
All the gear and no idea, mate.
Yeah, that's the look I'm going for.
I haven't got any gear.
You
haven't got a bat.
I haven't got a bat, no. I don't have to worry about space because I haven't got a bat. But, yeah, always wanted a duffel bag.
So, for the giveaway, obviously, we're asking people to send in their best stories, club cricket stories. We've had some really good ones, to be fair. A lot of nakedness, a lot of people getting injured, and a lot of people throwing up while drunk and stuff while playing, which is always good stuff. And we had a good story from you boys about TP last week, and I'm amazed that TP's missus hasn't been absolutely slating us for saying that story, to be fair.
Doesn't know what cricket is, mate.
Yeah, she isn't listening, mate.
She doesn't actually know where he goes on a Saturday. It's one of those relationships. He goes out for 6 or 7 hours on a Saturday. She doesn't know where he goes.
He
just comes back drunk. And that's all that matters. Club cricket in a nutshell.
So I wondered if Jono and Benny, if you'd got any good stories that you're allowed to share. Obviously, you can not name people if needed, but it doesn't necessarily have to be club cricket related as long as it's some form of cricket story.
Something village, preferably.
Preferably a bit village, a bit daft would be brilliant. I don't know who wants to go first. Who thinks they've got a better one or?
Benny can, because you put me right on the spot here.
Yeah. Something village, I probably have a lot of better stories than this, but I don't know, when I was playing Hampshire's second team when I was 16, 17, we played a game at Tunbridge Wells. I don't know if you've ever been there down at Kent. And basically, there's a nice pavilion, and then either side, you know, you get all the members there and they sit, in front of the pavilion, and then there's just a walkway in the middle where the players go in and out. And I played with someone called Chris. I don't know if you heard of him, Chris Benham. Do you remember him at Hampshire?
He was my captain at Wimbledon for a year.
Oh, really?
He's the angriest man I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, and so he got a bad decision in that game, and probably about 20 meters out, he was, hear him swearing, fucking, sorry, swear on this, doesn't matter, like, fuck this shit, whatever. And the whole, everyone in the ground could hear him. And then all of a sudden he did this big wind up with his bat and just winged his bat. But the amazing thing about it, it went perfectly through old members sitting either side, through the pathway, bounced, pinged all the way through the door and landed perfectly. So it was just like a table in the middle, like upright there. And it was one of the most amazing things I've ever witnessed. I was this angriest man, but at the same time managed to wing his bat in a perfect like alignment through all of the people on the side, and then managed to land his bat straight upright in the inside of the table. And that was one of the funniest things I've seen. It's something simple like that. But that I remember when I was 16, 17, I was like, oh, this guy's good. He's got it.
I want to know what the player... So what was your reaction? What are the lads doing at this point in time? Because I can see this game one of two ways, absolute mass hilarity or total silence.
Well, I think I was just sitting there just amazed by him. I was like, he was my hero. I was like, that is incredible what he's done, so that's what I thought. I think everyone was just sniggering and just laughing. I can't remember, to be honest. It was just amazed by the accuracy of his throwing in the midst of his pure anger.
No pressure, Jono.
The members were just gobsmacked. They were just mouths open. I'm sure they were amazed it didn't even hit them. So, yeah, it was good.
His missus is the most chilled late girl as well, like you've ever met, Yorkie. Like, but yeah, Benners is a special kind of human when he's on one. I guess mine's more of a story where I was absolutely in awe of someone. So, Jason Roy used to play for Reigate Priory. That's his club in Surrey. And they played against Wimbledon, played against the Ones. So we got rain-reduced game, 30 overs. We put up 130 and thought we're in with a shout here. So Jason Roy walks out to open the bat, and he's only young at this point, maybe 18, with Aidan Blizzard, who played first-class cricket in Australia and is still kind of knocking about, and he's known as someone who absolutely belts it. So you might know Richard Bannum, Benny. He got released by Hampshire. He bowled absolute rockets, this bloke. He's another absolute space cadet.
Nottingham, originally.
Yeah. He's at Hampstead now. He's charging in at J-Roy, first ball. Now, over the boundary and over a road, there's a set of trees that are about 100 feet high. J-Roy tracked him, first ball, and just sent him. It was still going up over these trees. And we're just going, what the fuck's just happened here? Thinking we're in with a chance. We walked off having lost in 8.5 overs. Jason Roy, 103 not out of 34 balls. And Aidan Blizzard, supposed to be the belter of the turf, and was scrapping about for 30 not out at the other end. And we didn't know what I'd have to... No one in the ground knew what to even say. But, like, you know, it was the first time we saw Jason and just the most explosive hitting. The only bloke I've ever played against and I've been scared to stand in the field. He hits it that hard. Like, you know, or maybe he just times it a million times better than I ever could. I don't know. But, it's a story from club cricket that's just always... I enjoy telling it. But, yeah, just an unbelievable talent. And obviously he's gone on to do pretty well in the white ball game, certainly.
That reminds me of absolutely not a Jason Roy story by any stretch of the imagination, but a North Staffs Division 1 story. Aid was actually on holiday this week, so he's got no... It was all his fault because he threw a Benny Howell and said, sorry, Skip, I'm away next week, can't make it. And we smacked about 270 off our 50 overs. Really, really good score. Baking hot August bank holiday weekend. Absolutely belting day. We smacked a massive score. Silverdale aren't doing too well. But they have got Saheed Mansour, was their overseas pro. And he was about 40 at the time, but he played for Pakistan. And the guy could play. I think his first-class average in Pakistan was nearly 50. The guy could play. And he's got smacked about everywhere, bowling some horrible off-spin. And I think they were about 80 for 5 or 80 for 6. We're thinking this is just a matter of time here. And I think the two or three of us around the bat at the time just piped up to him and said, listen, mate, you only need about another 190 more. Said, I think you're going to have to get 180 of them, aren't you? And about an hour and a half later, I think he trudged off 174 not out, having knocked them off basically on his own in 45 overs or something like that.
Having a great holiday, though, I was.
You were having a great holiday, mate. Yeah, we were chasing that.
I think I texted him. It might have been your dad or someone, whoever was watching. And I'd like you said, they were 80 for 6. I was like, oh, all right, put my phone away, get the beers open, get the barbecue on. Went on the website, checked the score, and I was like, oh, fuck. 180. Cheers, well batted.
Yeah, try chasing leather for it as well. It was incredible. I don't think anyone else got above 20. Of 200 and odd. He just smacked it everywhere. He was an old man. He was grey. He had a big bushy beard and he was grey. He's class. He was class.
Well, I think there's some good examples for people who are sat at home trying to come up with stories, because I know quite a few of the local lads here. Some are sent in some great stories, but others are really scratching around, which I can't believe, because some of the characters around North Staffs, surely plenty of stories out there. Right, last thing for today, and I know Jono has been looking forward to this massively, and this might be one where Benny might be able to come up with one quickly. But we every week do Room 101. We come up with one thing that we want to get rid of and put in the bin from cricket, from club cricket, forever and ever. We've had in the bin so far is unmatching club helmets and club helmets with badges on, which we were glad to see go in the bin.
Sacrilege.
A couple of weeks ago, we had shocking music going in the bin. So stuff like AJ Tracy and Dave, not playing your good stuff like Oasis. And then last week, I said about your under-18s getting spinners getting hauled off for bowling two no balls. because it just does me train that a kid bowling leggies accidentally bowls one at about belly button height, and next thing the old bloke says, "Oh, rules are rules, lad, off you come," and all that shite, Bob Thomas. So that one went in the bin. That one wasn't even close. So, Jono, I'll let you start. What do you want to put in Room 101? What we put into the vote on Twitter?
Well, I've got two, and I'm not. Can I go with both of them?
Yeah, go for it.
So, first one, shit tees, dreadful. Cricket club, league cricket, shit tees. No time for them. There's a story where we, at my old club, Old Wimbledonians, the other year, the lady who was doing the tees, we're a massive fan of egg sandwiches, but she decided to spruce them up one day, so we had egg and prawn sandwiches together, egg and prawn in a sandwich. You've never heard anything like it. So shit tees have got to go in, because some clubs make a real effort. They're to be applauded. Clubs who do shit tees, no time for them. Secondly, WhatsApp groups where if you've got under 18s in them, their parents have to be in as well. Just
yes, tick.
You can actually talk like a group of lads, you know. So I've got no time for, you know, I understand that you've got to protect the juniors. Either have a separate group or just, you know.
Just do what we did, Johnny. We just shipped all the juniors out.
So yeah, we just shipped them out.
We just shipped them out so we could have a laugh ourselves.
I'm sure both of them will probably be voted to stay in Room 101 and get binned, because, yeah, there's nothing worse. I shouldn't say this as junior chairman, but I'm quite glad that the two, like, 16, 17-year-old lads in our second team chat, they are just as up for calling people totally inappropriate stuff and sending totally inappropriate stuff as we are. So we no parents involved here. And thankfully, I don't think the parents listen to this, so they won't know that.
I was going to say, at least this is going to live on the internet for the rest of time.
Yeah, they don't need to know about that. I'm not the welfare officer. I just run the juniors. Benny, have you got anything you'd like to put in the bin from cricket?
From club cricket?
Yeah, if you can think of one.
Yeah. I don't know in all leagues if they still do it, but when they do the sort of the limited overs game, yet you can still draw from the game and get points for not...
Yes! Oh, getting on every week.
That was our first week's one. And
yeah, well, okay. You already got that then. I can't deal with that.
They didn't put it in Room 101.
It got voted out, Benny. Sorry to say.
No. Well, okay.
We'll have a revote now, the pro
saying. When you've got a team pretty much done, and then you're just literally the next 20-25 overs just seeing them block out, it's just it just sucks the life out of you. It's horrible.
Benny, I'd like to let you know that John Oemi is what he likes to call himself, a front foot dobber. He is the man who would like to bat out for the draw against you.
Don't tell him this. I told you before this podcast, Benny Howell, right, was one of the one of my blast fantasy heroes. I absolutely worship the guy. All rounder, middle over wicket, always got fantasy points, and then they binned the fantasy off for 12 months, and now you're embarrassing me by calling me a front foot dobby. I'm absolutely Did you ever know that, by the way, Benny? You were the most underrated player in the 1 year that they did Vitality Fantasy Blast.
Did they do a proper one? Yeah, I was in that. I think I won it.
Yeah, do it. You were
me and Jack Taylor, we were up 1-2.
Were you really?
Yeah. Have a look at it. If it's the one they put on for a year or 2 years, 1 year I won it, and the next year he tipped me in the last year, we're 1-2. I'm not sure many people did it though.
Oh, we were obsessed. We literally Friday night the junior training night, and all of the lads in the first and second team used to.
It was a bit like the fan FBL, yeah. It was not like a Telegraph.
Yeah, exactly.
You make a better one tricky, don't they? Because obviously, like,
if you can find it, see who won it. Those two. It was there for 2 years. Me and Jack Taylor, the Woodstock boys.
If that's true, that's going to be wild, because that's been my story all week. Every week, no one would pick Benny Howell. Be like, I'm telling you, Benny Howell's going to come on in the middle. He's going to bowl at the death. He's going to bowl slow balls. He's going bat middle order, runs, wickets, points, lads, points. No one believed me. Everyone was like, oh, no, Luke Wright. Sussex are playing Essex. Luke Wright there. Get it in the bin. Get your money on Benny Howell.
Tim, we need to get as many pros on as we can, because then if we do this fancy league,
if there's any early team news of someone injured, mate, get him straight out.
Yeah, we're in.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed fantasy. I enjoyed that. Yeah, I enjoy fantasy. A good fantasy. Yeah.
Right, well, I think we've got three good ones to go in. We'll put the draw back to a revote because I'm with. I know Jono's not going to agree with us, Jono M here, but I'm with everyone else. I'm so glad that I'm in the shit leagues of North Staff and we play win lose.
Obviously, this year that you can still get a draw, but you only play 45 overs.
Yeah.
It's
45 over draw.
Some of the rules in the club cricket I'm playing here are quite extraordinary as well. It's 45 overs. And then the two bowlers can bowl 12 overs, and then three bowlers can bowl 8. So you can't, yeah.
That confused me as a skipper. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. So then the skipper's always trying to get me to bowl 12 overs, but I honestly, my body, I don't think I can do it. It's like, mate, no, I can't. I'm used to 4 only, so.
I'd just like to mention that you're now the second pro we've had on who's mentioned in club cricket having to tell the skipper they can't do the job, basically. Pat Brown said the other week he had to ask to not bowl the power play overs because he was getting sent round the moon.
It was the most incredible thing. Oh, really? He didn't have a game for Worcester, so he went back to play in the Birmingham League and he had to be asked. He had the embarrassment of having to ask to be taken off because he just said, I can't bowl at this, man. I can't bowl at him. Said some big youth was just caught him everywhere, so we had to get asked to take him off. It was incredible. I've never felt so close to a professional cricketer before in my life. It was amazing.
Wow.
Well, we'll put the three polls up on Twitter, and I'm sure people will have a great time voting on that. And I'm sure Jono will be campaigning to make sure that shit tees and shit tees especially, I think, because there's nothing worse when you turn up and you look at that table and it's £5 for what is basically the worst selection possible from the spa down the road. Fucking nothing worse.
I have one more thing. Compulsory showers at the end of the day, because there's some people that are there's a few people who just don't bother. That's it. Shower straight into their gear without showering. No, I can't deal with that. That's get in the shower. Fun. Good communal showers.
Deep showers.
Well, I'm sure we can have an whole episode on stories from showers if we need you to. But I don't know if that would be allowed to be published.
No, that'd be an R-rated session, that would, I'm afraid.
Right, well, I'd just like to say a massive thank you to Jono and Benny for joining us, because I think it's been an absolute cracker, to be fair, and I'm sure all the listeners will have a good laugh and a real good listen and sort of make them think a little bit about the mental health stuff as well that we talked about. So big thanks to you guys for coming on, and it is really, really appreciated you giving up your time.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
So just before we go, obviously, as always, if people can follow us on social media, subscribe to the pod, and of course, enter the giveaway, that'd be massive. Obviously, we want to give away these bags from Woodstock to three absolutely amazing stories that we can read out and probably spend a whole episode crying with laughter about, because that's really what we're after. As said, big thanks to Jono and Benny, and also big thanks to Woodstock for all their support. Make sure you go and have a look at the hoodies. And once we've got the 25% discount code, I'll put that out everywhere so you can get on, and as well as Aiden, Jono getting a new bat, everyone listening in the North Staff League can make sure they go and get one as well. Next week, we have got, in fact, Jono, I'll let you explain who we've got next week, because you're the man who sorted it for us.
Yeah, so next week we've got, for the cricket YouTube buffs, we've got Dan Allen joining us from Sandyside Cricket Club, the owner, founder and the runner of the Sandyside YouTube channel, commentator, occasional player, father, club man.
TikTok as well, isn't it now?
TikTok, apparently now. Instagram Lives, I've seen all sorts. Slightly earlier time of Wednesday next week rather than Thursday, because the Sandyside AGM is being held on Zoom on Thursday night, which is clashing with the podcast. So if you've had a few ales and you get home on a Saturday night and you look forward to watching the highlights from Sandyside and Three Bridges and the other cricket clubs who stream their matches onto YouTube, I am really, really interested. I am fangirling a bit as well, because I've always listened to him commentating on camera, so to be actually talking to him is dead cool. So we're going to talk about social media advancing the cricket club, cricket scene down there. We're going to talk a bit about the Surrey Trust League. We're going to talk about his fundraising efforts with Sanderstead using the YouTube channel. I think they're up over 1.5. I think they're getting close to 1.5 million views on YouTube from around the world. Absolutely brilliant for a village cricket club. So really interesting talking to Dan next week. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think we'll make next week a bit of a club cricket special. I think we'll have a little bit of chat about sort of why we love club cricket and just general chat about how good club cricket is and why people should maybe take part. Because amazingly, people who listen to this aren't just like cricket badgers like us. There is a few people who are actually listening who just occasionally watch cricket very rarely. So maybe like, convince a few of them to pick up
your
mum, Tony,
for example.
Yeah, my mum's already admitted that she skips through 90% of it because she doesn't understand what DRS review system is or anything like that. Just fair enough. But yes, so big thanks to you, Ev, for Jono and Benny for coming on. Looking forward to next week with Dan. I'm sure it'll be great. So a big thanks to everyone who's listened today. Have a good week, and hopefully when you see us next Wednesday, England will have had a good first day, hopefully. Cheers, guys.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.